Because of the heat of fire, I was delivered into the pot. I was because of the milk to become hot. And do the garb around me. The center of the rice. Within the milk becomes cooked. They are in rear position as fresh as I am. The bottle senses
Thank you.
And you have obligations to it. Says we want to avoid that and pretend that we can be a replacement for Krishna, then we're fallen. So anybody in the material world is fallen in one way or another due to this impersonalism. That's the previous verse the Prabhupada says this is a discussion on impersonal Mayavada philosophy and the practical philosophy of the Vaishnavas. So we do say that the soul cannot be affected by the conditions of material nature that he finds himself in. Fatness or all these dualities, they don't apply to the soul. The soul is not the body, the soul is not the mind or the intellect. It has nothing actually to do with the material world. So, therefore, Maharaj is incorrect. In his assumption that the soul is affected, he's giving the example of milk and rice, two different ingredients, and then he had the element of fire and the pot that they're placed into, and then the end result of that is that all of it becomes hot. So his idea is that if the body is affected, the mind is affected. If the mind is affected, the intelligence is affected. And if they're all infected or affected, then the soul itself must be naturally affected. That affection of the soul, that affectation of the soul, is an illusion. The soul is never changed in any circumstance. The soul remains the same. The soul is not the body, not the mind, not the intellect. It remains as it is. Whatever the conditions of material nature are, whether you're in it or out of it, whether you're in the material world pretending to be a body, or whether you're in the Brahman pretending to not be a body, pretending to not be an individual, you're in a fallen condition. So the Bhagavatam's philosophy is understood when we understand the unique nature of the soul, that it's not a product of anything, it's an emanation from the Supreme Soul, Krishna. The characteristics of the soul are exhibited because they're there in its origin, not because it's acquired some kind of personal aspects by coming into the material world, and that when you get free from the material world, you lose all your personal aspects. It's not there. But at the same time, Prabhupada said that Bharat Rupana is actually partially correct. Yeah. There are uses for this material energy. There's a practical benefit that the soul can get even in the material world. Because if we say that the soul is not affected by adverse material conditions, the soul cannot be affected by favorable conditions. That's logic. But then, how does the soul, what is the position of the soul? And Prabhupada's explaining that actually the soul is a part and parcel of Krishna, and all the material energy is also part of Krishna, it's Krishna's energies. And when you understand and see it in its relationship to Krishna, then you know the proper use of it, and it does have a use for the soul. It does have a use, at least for the souls in this material world who are in ignorance. So if the material energy is utilized in the proper way, the benefit for the soul is that its ignorance is removed. The covering is removed, and then the soul can shine in its true glory. So there is actually a practical way of utilizing the material energy, and the Vaishnavas know that. Mayavadis don't.
So sometimes when they understand, the person understands it's not this body, he thinks that the body then is useless. Or Saturn Jagan Michi. The whole Jagat is Michi, it's a false thing. It doesn't actually have any value or purpose or benefit. That's not the Vaishnava philosophy either. We agree that we're soul and that we're not matter. But we see that matter itself is an extension of the forces of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore can be used in His service. So in that way, the soul embedded in matter, becomes a Vaishnava, is very busy and active in all kinds of personal dealings. And in fact, the more that we advance in Christian consciousness, the more personal we become. So that's due to the fact that we can connect everything with Krishna, so everything is real in that sense. Nothing is false. It's just the misuse of it that's the problem. So the soul in this material world is struggling in ignorance, thinking themselves to be fat or thin or good or bad or man or woman or black or white or this or that. That person is definitely suffering, superficially at least, due to ignorance. Ignorance is the real suffering condition. You remove the ignorance, the soul remains as it is, but now with a proper sense of functionality. Now, instead of trying to imitate and falsely present himself as something that he's not, he can present himself as something that he is, which is an apparent apostle of God, a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and in the advanced stage is a lover of the Supreme Lord, exchanging all kinds of mellows and rasas. So the material, the Vaishnavas don't reject living in the material world, and therefore you see so many times it's mentioned that either in heaven or in hell, it doesn't make any difference for a Vaishnava. As long as, I'm just reading, I think Bhakti Vinod Thakur, one of his songs, he says that as long as I can remember Krishna, it doesn't matter whether I'm in heaven or in hell. It's the same place. When Prabhupada was traveling around, he used to say, once I think he was asked about the difficulties of traveling and so far away from home and in foreign countries, and Prabhupada said, what is home? He said, this is all Krishna's backyard. So I'm perfectly happy wherever I am, because he saw everything as being connected to Krishna, and he knew how to utilize that in Krishna's service. Therefore, it's in fully developed consciousness. So our journey is to try to get out of ignorance and into full awareness. And this impersonalism is the manifestation of our ignorance. Anybody who identifies with the material body is an impersonalist. So therefore, Prabhupada's pranam mantra, this is particularly what Prabhupada was trying to do, is save us from impersonalism, Sunyavad, Mayavad, this bad, that bad. Yeah, that was Prabhupada's mission, to bring us back to the personal platform. Now that's the process of devotional service. It's not difficult in one sense. We just have to accept the supremacy of the Supreme Lord. Once that's done, then you can be trained. But if one does not bow down submissively and accept Krishna as the Supreme Person, you can't get out of the material world. You might get to the man, fine. But that's still a form of condition of life. So we want to get true liberation, and true liberation means that we subordinate, or we accept our subordination to Krishna, then we're actually liberated. Liberation doesn't mean that you become the master of all you survey, but it means you become the servant of the Supreme Lord, who is all you survey. So in that moment, this is Bhakti Yoga process. So Maharaj Rahudana is kind of a bit mixed up. He's not clear on what's really going on. He's obviously had some education, because immediately that he heard the words coming from Jack Bharat, he realized he'd made a big mistake in insulting him, and he bowed down and offered his apologies. So he was a big king. German kings don't do things like that. command to maintain the illusion of power and command. So they don't like to bow down before anybody. But for him to get down shows that, you know, he had some culture, he had some training, he could recognize a great certain person, although he didn't know the philosophy that well, but he could understand this is a very advanced soul that I'm dealing with here. So that's be very, very careful. And more than that, he started to ask questions. So that's human life. It begins at that point. Talk to Brahma Jitya. So start asking questions, start trying to figure out what is pleasure and what is pain, and how can you actually improve your situation? Look to the highest point. That's spiritual life. That's human life. And anything less than that is a waste of time. So Krishna consciousness is the solution to all problems in life because it ends that ignorance. And there's no other process that can do that. You see some of the religious processes or yogic processes, but practically all of that, they understand God in an impersonal way. They have no understanding of personality, past times, the exchanges of love and devotion that are going on in the spiritual world. At best, they see God as being some kind of, you know, all-pervasive controlling force in this material world, but they have no information about the spiritual world. And that's the unique gift that the Bhagavatam gives us, that it explains very clearly what the spiritual world actually is, what the stage of liberation actually is. And just by reading the Bhagavatam, all the inauspicious things within the heart are vanquished to nil. That's the prayer that we sing. That inauspiciousness is this tendency towards impersonalism. It's that tendency to identify the self with matter. That's impersonalism of one kind or another. So the Bhagavatam immediately, or Krishna, in his instructions to Arjuna, the first thing that he deals with is that point that you're not this body. And if you can't understand that you're not this body, you haven't got a chance of making any advancement in spiritual life at all. So all of these various kinds of pseudo-religions or religious processes which reinforce, actually, the sense that we are the body, they're all ignorance. They're all opposite to what real spiritual processes are applied for. That you practice your religion to get something more, to get free from disease, to get more material, you know, accoutrements, you know, scar, this, that, nice family, position in society, money, whatever. In many religions, that's their whole focus is material development. They recognize that this is supreme power. That's nice. But they don't understand the personal aspects of that supreme power. So at best, what they do is go begging. And so, give me this, give me that, or the supplier. God becomes subordinate to my desire. If there is a God at all, then he should fulfill the desires that I'm expressing through my so called prayers. I don't want to suffer, free me from suffering. Give me good health, give me this, give me that. So, still, the same mentality is there, that you want to make God in second place, not first place. Now he's subordinate to my desire. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's expressing the actual platform of religious life or spiritual life. Now, they don't mention it, that's in the world. I don't want anything. Why? Because the sense of possession of any of these things is all an illusion. That's just really ignorance. Yeah, just life after life can be a devotional service. Because as long as you can live in clear consciousness, it doesn't matter whether you're in the spiritual world or the so-called material world. There is no material world. There is no material world. When a person's in full consciousness, they see everything as part and parcel of Krishna, Krishna's energies. So what's the question of material? The idea of material is ignorance. That's what materialism means. It means ignorance. Ignorance of the true nature of the soul. So in that way, that by spiritual careful development, that ignorance can be gradually removed. On the way, there's going to be some confusion. And Maharaj Rogana here is just beginning his spiritual life now. It's by the grace of Krishna come in contact with the pure devotee. And so these misunderstandings and misconcepts that he has, they'll all be gradually cleared up in the course of this conversation. So anybody that meets with a pure devotee is the most fortunate person in the world, because they can actually get out of the material world very quickly. Therefore, it's said that Lava Matra Sarusanga, even if you get a moment's association with a pure devotee, it's enough to make a life perfect. Because a pure devotee can actually open the door to the spiritual world and get you out of the material world. But that, if you have that little connection somehow or another, and if we're receptive to it, that's the other part of this, is that Maharaj Rahugana is extremely receptive. Although he's illusioned in so many ways, thinking himself to be a king and the master of his battle queen and whatever. At the same time, he's got this respect. Yeah, that's culture. That's real culture. That culture was all based on respect. Everybody respecting each other and ultimately respecting the Supreme Personality of Godhead and seeing everybody in relation to the Supreme Lord. If you have respect for God, then you have respect for all of his gods and classes. That comes naturally. So spiritual life is a culture. Culture is the environment by under which one becomes educated. They go together. Culture is the support for education. You can give education, but if you don't give the culture that's supposed to go with it, that sustains it, then it becomes distorted. Culture is the cultivates like cultivation. A cultivator is a person that grows things in a field. So in the same way, culture is that system or way of life that enables us to grow. Now what we want to grow into, that depends on the kind of culture that we've been brought up in. If we're brought up in Vedic culture, Prabhupada used to say, is Indian culture, is Bhagavad Gita culture. There is a culture in the Bhagavad Gita. There is a culture that comes from living according to the Bhagavad Gita. I know sometimes it's been argued that there's no such thing as Vedic culture. There's one or two of our scholars that are into this kind. There's no real identifiable entity or thing or way of life that you can say this is Vedic culture. So that's been used to interpret that therefore you can do so many things, which here in ISKCON we would not necessarily approve of. But we have a set of rules and rituals, if you like, that we follow. And somebody might argue that it's not necessary to have a shaved head, it's not necessary to wear a sari or a dhoti, you know, because you say you want to follow the culture, but the dhoti, you know, is not mentioned anywhere in the Bhagavatam. When it mentions that, you know, Krishna has a yellow garment, there's a word that's there for the garment, it's not dhoti. So you can't argue, therefore, that the logic goes that wearing a dhoti makes you more Krishna conscious, you know, or more a follower of Vedic culture. So anyway, it's a big discussion, but the point is that actually there is a Vedic culture. Prabhupada identified very clearly what Vedic culture is. It's that culture which is there in the Bhagavad Gita. That you're not this body, that you're a soul, you're a person with the Supreme Spirit, Soul, Krishna, and you have to serve in that culture, or that should form the basis of your culture. And then whatever is conducive toward that end can be accepted as part of that culture. So in our ISKCON movement, you know, we have that culture, Vedic culture, or sense of Vedic culture, and we do various, let's say, external practices which help us to enhance that sense of Vedic culture. So we have a uniform, we have a dhoti, so it's ourselves, because it helps us to remind us who we really are. The act of wearing a dhoti or a sari in itself is not spiritual, but when it's aimed, when it's used to shore up or improve or support a sense of spirituality, then it is spiritual. So in that way, that we learn how to use and see everything in Krishna's service, we create a culture. We create a culture of Krishna pride, love of Godhead. As everybody of the like mind comes together, and from sharing that same culture, then everybody gets enthused, they get information that they can't normally get on their own. If you sit and just read the books, you can get one kind of understanding. But if you hear it from somebody who's self-realized, you get another. So in that way, then, we have to seek out the association of devotees, pure devotees, who know what they're talking about, who know what Vedic culture actually is, Bhagavad Gita culture, and an education, and then can actually transmit it practically. That was Srila Prabhupada. So we shouldn't say that when Prabhupada says or mentions Vedic culture, we shouldn't turn around and say there's no such thing as Vedic culture. What we should be doing is looking for ways and means of showing how Prabhupada's statement about Vedic culture is correct, not learning how to dismiss it. So in that way, anyway, I'm getting a little off on a tangent here, but my point is that there is a way of life, a way of living, that's called culture, which supports spiritual development, and we should be very careful to keep ourselves in that culture. In the material world, there's all different kinds of aspects of material culture, but they're all based on one common denominator that they think that they are the body. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was asked what's the first thing that a Vaishnava should do, or a person who wants to be a Vaishnava, what should they do? The first thing he says is asat sangit jaga. You give up the association of the asat. Those who are in the bodily concept of life, those who identify with something which is not real, this material body, give that association up. Because just by interacting with the materialist, you get drawn into their material consciousness. They relate to everybody else as if they are their body, and that person that they're talking to is their body. So when we talk with them, you know, materialistic persons, although they may appear to be very well educated, they may appear to be, you know, sophisticated or aristocratic, you know, or just good people. But if they don't know that they're not this body, then you lose enemy. Actually, for somebody who wants to make spiritual advancement, to associate with materials, those who are in this ignorance, not understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that association will destroy spiritual life. You have to give it up. You have to be there with persons of a like mind, following the same kind of culture. So it's possible that Prabhupada wanted to change the culture of the world. Now, the external trappings of culture, they may vary. We agree with that. But culture means at its core, the way of life, the approach to life, the way we see life and the way that we live life. And that has to be on the basis of a spiritual understanding that we're not this body, we are past and passes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's culture, and that culture is what Prabhupada wanted to spread all over the world. One of our devotees, one time, he was on TV in Australia with the Peel Wolf, I think that's his name, the cricketer. Yeah, Kapil Dev. So he retired from cricket. This guy was one of the big icons of Indian cricket. And he just came out with a new book. So they had him on the TV in Australia because they're also big on cricket there. And he's well known. So they had a devotee on because he's Indian and, you know, the devotees appear to be following an Indian way of life. So at one point, Kapil Dev. Well, they were talking about the clothing, you know, the Dolce's and Sarah's and T-Lock and stuff. And at one point, Kapil had made this comment that you can't change the culture of a whole country. There was a some intimation that we were out to change the culture of the Western people. And I guess they identified that with everybody from Shreve up and put Sarah's and Dolce's on. And Kapilda, he said, although this is like Indian culture, what these people are doing, you can't expect to change the culture of another culture by what you're doing. Which is ironic, because he's there, he's an Indian. Right, he got his name and fame from playing cricket, which is a very Indian game. Sure. It's a British game. And he's sitting there in his Western clothes. And he's speaking the English language. He's, printed a book in English about a British game. And he's saying that it's not possible to change a country's culture. And that is completely culturally conquered. Right? It's not what India was. It doesn't represent anything to do with Indian culture, if you like, or Vedic culture. But he's saying, you can't change the culture. How about disagreed. You can change people's culture by education, and culture supports further education, so the two go hand in hand. So Prabhupada wanted to introduce this Bhagavad Gita Vedic culture that begins by understanding the not the body, because that's the way to overcome impersonalism, which is the blight of all conditioned souls, impersonalism. That's the real disease, and therefore, in Prabhupada's pronounced prayers, that's what he was aiming for. To destroy this impersonalism and bring everybody back to the condition of being eternal, past and passes, and servants of the Supreme Personality of the Godhead. Okay, we'll finish it. I guess it's getting a little late. Last thing on the message. The microphone. Is it on? Yes, well, that debate will go on for a long time. ultimately, anything that convinces you you're not this body and you're part and parcel of Krishna is welcome. And anything that tends to draw your attention away, enlightenment is being spiritual, is not welcome. So it really requires intelligence how to apply the philosophy in different times, places, and circumstances. Therefore, you see that Prabhupada never insisted that the devotees should wear dhotis and saris and these things. But he did insist that they should always chant, they should associate together, they should only eat prasadam. And actually, as far as dressing goes, Prabhupada did say, whilst, you know, like talking about the men particularly, he said they can wear suits and coats, but he said still they must wear tilak and the flag. Yes. Yeah. So there is some value to the, you know, externals. Although, you know, if the person's nicely situated in Krishna consciousness, you know, they don't follow any particular formalities or rules and regulations because they're already beyond that. Like Bamsini Das Babaji, he was an avidute, so he walked around naked sometimes. Sukadeva Goswami used to walk around naked, but nobody complained because he was so advanced. But if somebody, an ordinary person, tried to imitate that, then that'd be in big trouble. So the external trappings of culture are still important because they do affect our consciousness in the early stages, in the neophyte stages. And therefore, Prabhupada devised things in such a way as to, you know, maximize our understanding or our realization that we are devotees, even though sometimes, you know, we're still in a very kind of material frame of mind. But the external situation then supports your spiritual pursuit. Once you've attained a spiritual goal, you can be anywhere and do anything, and we accept that. But you can't do that when you're in your mind. So, you know, we do get affected by our surroundings. Our consciousness does get affected, you know, just by the clothes we wear, the kind of, you know, interests that we pursue, the music, the dance, whatever it may be, the food that we eat. All of those are reflections of our state of consciousness. So we have to do what we can externally and internally to come to that point of pure devotion. We need a lot of help for that.
So a question would be, is there a tipping point where you pile or you put on too much external ethnic kind of stuff, calling it spiritual, to the point where it interferes with people's ability? And Prabhupada was very sensitive to that word. That's why in LA he even said at one point, keep the pews in the when they made the first temple, he told them to keep the pews in there and have chairs so that people could sit. Many different things, you know, he did with what he did with women. He even was, you know, quoted to say, I succeeded because I allowed women to live in the ashram. Not to get off on that particular thing, but many things Prabhupada did, he minimized some things because he thought there were battles that didn't need to be fought. They weren't beneficial for taking up the process for Krishna consciousness. They were distracting. Now it seems that the number of those items is growing and becoming, in some people's minds, so important that it almost supersedes the essentials of practice of Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, it's a balance. We have to be careful not to project our material concerns and consciousness into the spiritual arena. There's certain ways to act and behave. And if you overdo it, let's say, like, another example is the installation of deities. You know, that's very nice to have, you know, a big three-day affair and go through all the processes and this and that and the other. But at the same time, we have to remember that the Prabhupada installed most of the deities that he installed in Islam. He did it with a bucket full of the layla and lots of chairs. So, maybe some insight would think that, well, if that's all the three-day process has been followed, and, you know, it's extreme ritualism doesn't have them, the deity is not properly installed, and therefore this is not really Christian. They come to that conclusion that we understand. So, distinguishing theologian it's not as bad religiously, it's not what it is. It's that's for emphasism. So we have to be careful to put that still in the region of the purpose of what we should do. The purpose is to surrender to Christian somewhere or another. So there can be all kinds of adjustments, God is willing to make adjustments. But at the same time, to adjust things to the point where the spiritual essence of what we're doing is diminished. So, not too far into the ritual, not too far away from the ritual. That's the only way. You have to have a balance. Keep a sense of what you're doing. Be able to make intelligent decisions about how to adjust your body. And circumstances, but still keep your eye on the darkness.
Thank you.
Yes, well, Prabhupada's explanation of having the Westerners come to India to learn that culture means that they are new to culture. Means understanding it on this body and your own person serving Krishna. That's the culture that Prabhupada wanted the Westerners to come to Mayapur to learn. And when he was talking about a Mayapur university, this is the particular part that he will teach people that they're not this body. That's his definition of a real university. Not that, you know, they learn so many materialistic arts. Said that's the reflection of the Sudra culture. Technology, mechanisms, industrialization. It's all for the Sudras. That's not real education. Real education is that you learn about this problem. I have to finish that statement. So the whole time, keep each other. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.